bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoo. We're glad you can join us. In a surprise move, a young four-term congressman announced over the weekend that he's done with politics. Is a coincidence the man calling it quits recently heard loud and clear from angry constituents after he voted against impeaching Mayorkas? We're going to look at those critical stories soon. But first, it turns out that if you want to be immune to prosecution, all you need is to be named Biden. Last week, the Justice Department special counsel, Robert Hur, the man investigating Joe Biden's illegal possession of troves of classified documents, issued his decision, and its double standard nature surprises no one. Biden, the report included, is guilty of multiple criminal acts as a senator and vice president for obtaining and keeping documents he knew were classified. But the DOJ will not prosecute Joe Biden because his intentions are pure. He's been cooperating fully with the investigation, and he's a kindly, forgetful old man whom the jury would not convict. It's mighty interesting that cooperating with an investigation is a mitigating factor in this case when something like that is considered only in the sentencing phase of a trial and not in the decision of whether to try. Lots of criminals cooperate in investigations, including pleading guilty in the hopes of getting lighter sentences. Lots of inmates are kindly and cooperative in hopes of getting early parole. Some inmates even get released from prison when they're very old and infirm. But none of them, at least none not named Biden, get to avoid prosecution altogether in exchange for cooperation or because they're old and infirm. The Biden decision is so outrageous that even the media were sharply critical. Listen as reporters questioned Biden at the White House.
President Biden, something the special counsel said in his report is that one of the reasons you were not charged is because, in his description, you are a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory.
I'm well-meaning, and I'm an elderly man, and I know what the hell I'm doing. I've been president, and I put this country back on its feet. I don't need his recommendation.
That's totally out. How bad is your memory, and can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Do you feel your memory has gotten worse, Mr. President?
My memory is not good. My memory is fine. My memory, take a look at what I've done since I've become president. None of you thought I could pass any of the things I got passed. How'd that happen? You know, I guess I just forgot what was going on.
Mr. President.
Voters have concerns about your age. How are you going to assuage them? And do you fear that this report is only going to fuel further concerns about your age?
Only by some of you.
Mr. President, you have criminal liability today. Do you take responsibility for at least being careless with classified material?
I take responsibility for not having seen exactly what my staff was doing. It goes in and points out things that appeared in my garage, things that came out of my home, things that were moved not by me, but my staff.
Mr. President, for months when you were asked about your age, you would respond with the words, "Watch me." Watch many me. American people have been watching, and they have expressed concerns about your age.
That is your judgment.
To public
that is not the judgment
concerns,
of the press.
They express concerns about your mental acuity. They say that you are too old. Mr. President, in December, you told me that you believe there are many other Democrats who could defeat Donald Trump. So why does it have to be you now? What is your answer to that question?
Because I'm the most qualified person in this country to be president of the United States and finish the job I started.
The reporters may be indignant because they're afraid that Hur's decision will allow Trump to avoid further prosecution as well. After all, Trump was president at the time he took documents that were classified himself, something every other president in recent memory has done. The difference is that none of the other presidents were named Trump, so their actions were never questioned. Biden, however, was not president when he and his staffers made off with classified material, yet he's getting off scot-free while the lawfare against Trump continues with urgency. Biden himself gave a bizarre press conference in which he defended his actions and his fitness to be president. He also spoke off the cuff about foreign affairs, which only made the case more that he's mentally unfit to be president. Take a listen.
I'm of the view, as you know, that the conduct of the response in the Gaza Strip has been over the top. I think that, as you know, initially, the president of Mexico, Sisi, did not want to open up the gate to allow humanitarian material to get in. I talked to him. I convinced him to open the gate. I talked to Bibi to open the gate on the Israeli side. I've been pushing really hard to get humanitarian assistance into Gaza.
All right, joining me to discuss today's stories is executive senior editor of The New American, Steve Bonta. Steve, we got so much to go over. We're going to take this in the next segment to do so. But what does Mexico have to do with Israel and Gaza?
Well, you know, CC, BB, right? AMLO, there's so many of these disyllabic words, nicknames out there. Who can keep them straight?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's obviously making the case against some. What do you think's going on with this? Do you think this was a report that was genuinely allowed to come out, or was it part of a strategy? Obviously, you have no way of knowing for sure, but you got a bunch of articles there on your desk.
Well, okay, so this news happened last Thursday, and we're a little bit behind things because we typically don't do a current event show on Friday. So we're talking about something that happened last week, but that's okay because in the intervening days, a lot of things have developed to kind of suggest where this is headed and what's going on. So as you saw there, he gives a press conference the day after. Oh, and by the way, Robert Herr is a Trump appointee, and some of the Biden defenders are making a point. You know that Merrick Garland should never have selected a Trump appointee because, of course, we assume that all Trump appointees are going to be partisan, even hyper-partisan.
That was a point that Morton Joe
made.
Something,
of course, the Democrats never are. You know, so in any event, so that's a point to me. So then Biden goes out, gives a press conference. The first part is perhaps more scripted, but more to the point, he's defending himself. So he comes across as this indignant, angry old grandpa, kind of petulant, which is not the first time. This is sort of the persona he's had for a number of years off and on in moments of relative lucidity. Then he walks off, having dealt with all the questions regarding his fitness to be president and the special, all this stuff. He's about to head out the door. Someone asks a question regarding Gaza that attracts attention. He sort of stops, stares slack-jawed ahead for a moment, turns around, shuffles back to the podium, and then hilarity ensues, as you showed there, because now he's speaking off the cuff about something that he doesn't really seem to understand very clearly. He obviously refers to Mexico because in the back of his mind, he's processing the fact that Mexico and the border is a big concern as well, and may lead to his electoral downfall.
Yeah, you think that's what's happening? Because obviously,
who knows what's going on in the tortured recesses of his superannuated brain?
Yeah,
you know,
strategist James Carville, who I believe was behind, was it Bill Clinton's both of his campaigns? I'm not sure, but he was at least behind one of them. He noticed that it was kind of strange that Biden did not take the opportunity to address a Super Bowl audience, and he's saying that's truly indicative that the man is gone, and you can tell here, obviously.
Well, and I mean, I have in front of me a spread of articles that have appeared in the days since, and this is just a small sampling. So a couple of these from New York Times pieces, all of them saying the same thing: Biden, you need to step down, while acknowledging that they really can't force him to do, meaning step down from running for president again, not for the White House.
Okay? Yeah.
But all of them acknowledging that this is a very thorny issue because no one can compel him to do this. Mm. He's tried to become president a number of times over the decades, finally succeeded. He's finally got the gold ring, the ring of power, as it were. And even in his age and infirmity, he's reluctant to relinquish it. But the gist of this seems to be that his erstwhile allies in the press and in the political establishment are turning on him. Politico had a piece today mapping out a strategy saying, here's what Biden can do to, you know, resign with grace, go through the entire primary process, win the primary, and then in June at the convention, you know, step aside and allow a brokered convention and indicate, you know, I could still do this, but I'm going to defer to what the American public opinion seems to be saying. All of these people are also unanimous in saying that no matter how bad Biden is, Trump is worse.
Yes, yes.
So there's
I want us to dive into that. So after this, we are going to look and to see, to speculate if this is the end of Biden. We're going to be right back.
Hey, America. How tired are you of mainstream corporate media's biased narratives and manipulated news? Their dishonesty and attempts to influence this generation have been exposed. put on display for anyone who's even half paying attention. But the New American Magazine has been an honest source of news and commentary for over 50 years. This is your opportunity to receive the stalwart of principled journalism at a deep discount. Picture a beautifully published magazine arriving at your doorstep twice a month, packed with insightful stories written with integrity. It's also available digitally on the New American's mobile app. Get up to speed with intelligent coverage from a freedom perspective. Right now, for a limited time, the New American is available to radio listeners at a 25% discount on a new subscription. Visit thenewamerican.com/radio25 and receive 25% off. Subscribe today at thenewamerican.com/radio25.
Hey folks, the New American will be at CPAC next week, and we'll be bringing you exclusive interviews and news right from the event in Washington, D.C. I'll be there along with my colleague, TNA senior editor Veronica Karolinko, and we're going to talk to some of the most important people in GOP politics. So make sure to tune in to thenewamerican.com next week for exclusive TNA coverage of CPAC. All right, so we're going to continue our conversation here, Steve. I understand that you actually read a good bit of this report.
The entire report is over 300 pages, but fortunately they furnished something called an executive summary at the beginning, which is typically, I think it was like 25 pages. I have read that, and you know, so there's no need. I mean, I'm not a legal anyway, unlike our colleague Joe Wolverton, probably, you know, and people like that. I just don't get into reading long legal documents, but the summary is sufficient, and it lays out both, it summarizes how the investigation was carried out, what their findings were, and perhaps most importantly, why they concluded with regard to all possible counts not to pursue charges, not to prosecute. Okay. So, and I can summarize it thusly. In effect, it says, well, yes, we found that he did willfully conceal classified documents.
Yes, but it's
years.
The staff's fault.
But he did that, and then it goes on to, you know, he shared them with a ghostwriter. He actually shared parts of someone with a ghostwriter.
Really?
Who was writing a book for him, and all this sort of thing on recordings. The ghostwriter actually recorded material. So
isn't that illegal?
So there were some flagrant repeated violations of the Espionage Act, among other things. Okay,
and wow.
And so forth. But in each case, the summary then absolves himself of us saying, well, yes, but we don't think a jury would convict, or he's, as was mentioned, of course, much has been made of the kindly forgetful old man meme, but that's in effect what it says at one point, that we don't, you know, that he can easily plead that he really didn't know what he was doing and no jury would convict, and so forth and so on. Now, obviously, prosecutors in general do weigh questions, you know, when deciding whether to charge someone for a crime. Gee, do we really have enough evidence here?
Yeah.
But in this case, the issue is not the evidence. The evidence is very clear.
The intent, apparently.
Well, right. I mean, they're weighing the intent. They're saying, you know, of course, much has made all, we mentioned this already, that he cooperated. Well, gee, that's great. So I suppose if Richard Ramirez, a.k.a. the Night Stalker, had, after his murderous rampage back in the 80s, had sat down with the prosecutor and said, you know what? I'm not going to be a devil worshiper anymore. I'm going to cooperate with you guys. I'm going to tell you where all the bodies are buried. Yeah. I'm going to bare my soul. And please don't give me the death penalty.
Well, what about all the mass killers?
That's not how it works, okay?
Right. Well, what about all the mass killers who, once they were caught, they cooperated? What kind of argument
is
this?
Well, they do. And what happens and what they're hoping for? I mean, none of them dare entertain in their darkest dreams the expectation, well, gee, if I'm just nice enough to the police, they'll just drop all the charges. No, what they're hoping is that they won't get the death penalty, or that they won't get, you know, 100 consecutive life sentences, that there'll be some sort of leniency, that they'll be in prison, but there might be parole. I mean, that's what they're doing. That's the name of the game, is if you're cooperative, maybe you get leniency in sentencing, particularly if you give a speech, you know, confessing how the awful things you've done and so forth. I mean, that's how the game is played. So
well,
Biden's done all
it.
These things. Mm-hmm. But they declined to even prosecute, saying, well, we can't really, you know, do it. So, the obvious inference from this is clear. If you happen to be surnamed Biden or Clinton, I mean, let's not forget, a very similar script was carried out with Hillary Clinton, okay? Then you're subject to completely different rules from the rest of us, including those of us named Trump.
It's that two-tier justice system. Yep. Let's talk about what I think most cynical people like us in an alternative media are discussing, and that is whether this is the beginning of a coordinated, orchestrated campaign by the deep state forces to essentially remove Biden from running in this year. A lot of people suspect there's no way this guy is running. We just showed video last segment of why that would people would suspect that's the guy's not there. It's clear as day. Everyone sees it, even the leftist press. So is this it? Is this the beginning of Biden?
The beginning of the end? I certainly
hope. The beginning of the end.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, but I'm not holding my breath. I'm taking it from the Democrats' point of view. If not Biden, then who?
Right, and that's a question. I mean, there's Newsom running a ghost campaign.
Newsom is obviously hoping that his chance will come.
Mm-hmm.
But Newsom is easy. I mean, if you look at what he's done in California,
he's too easy to pick off, in spite of
the polished good looks and the charisma and all the swagger and all this stuff, look at what he's done in the state of California.
Yeah,
it's a target-rich environment as far as Trump is concerned.
Yeah, can you imagine how many campaigns you could run of like homeless encampments in the streets?
But then the other problem is if you dump Biden, then the obvious heir apparent is his vice president.
Which apparently
the incredibly unpopular, incompetent, ditzy, and thoroughly corrupt Kamala Harris.
Yes.
She's very, very, I mean, she's extremely, I mean, her likability scores make Biden look like Mr. Popularity.
Remember in the Democratic primary
how bad she was. Right. But here's the problem. If you get rid of her, if you get rid of Biden and say yes, but anyone but Kamala, which would be the pragmatic choice. I mean, Newsom would certainly be a better candidate than Kamala.
There's talk of Mrs. Obama.
Yeah, well, Michelle Obama is the one that they're talking about. Now, but here's the thing. If you get rid of Kamala, you can't risk alienating the African-American community more than they're already alienated. I realize this isn't really what we normally traffic in, issues of principle and this sort of thing. It's more of a political
stuff. We're acknowledging
stuff.
How they work.
But this
though.
Is the politics. This is what these people are thinking.
Yes.
The overarching concern, the imperative here is whatever happens, don't let the orange man back in the Oval Office.
Yes.
So okay. So that's what's going to inform their actions and decisions, you know, all of the maneuvering behind the scene over the next weeks and months is how can we make sure Trump doesn't get out? Now, obviously, you know, some of the Trump cases are foundering badly, and so that could redound in his favor. But, you know, I mean, if you look at the world right now, Pakistan has, in effect, tried and then jailed and then had name removed from the ballot, the name of Imran Khan, who actually is like Trump. He's a media personality in Pakistan, but for being a cricket player, he's a cricket star back in the 90s. Okay, mm-hmm. Cricket's big in Pakistan. And he's running to be reelected as president of prime minister of Pakistan. They've removed his name from the ballot. The people rose up and voted for him anyway, and so now Pakistan's in confusion. Venezuela is doing similar things, removing, you know, opposition candidates from the ballot, jailing them.
Yeah.
Brazil is doing likewise, or trying to do against Bolsonaro and his supporters. Russia, of course, Putin's Russia, has been removing, you know, candidates who are challenged Putin in this year's so-called elections.
Mm-hmm.
Do we really want to be in the company of countries like that? I mean,
no.
That's really where all this is headed, is, you know, behind all the Biden drama, I mean, everyone knows he is non compos mentis.
Well, you know what's surprising, though, is because the left is always talking about choice and, you know, having good candidates and having their being represented, especially the little man, the average man or whatever. But they don't have much of a democratic process when it comes to electing candidates.
Yeah, the reason we got President Trump and not, say, President Bernie Sanders or candidate Bernie Sanders is that the democratic process, of course, again, this is the same projection that you see over.
They pushed them out.
Is anything but democratic. They use the superdelegates to steer the process to make sure that a candidate approved by the party, the democratic
by the
equivalent
machine.
Of rhinos, right? I mean, imagine if the Republicans were like that. We would have a steering committee made of superdelegates.
We'd have Nikki Haley and Jeb Bush before
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Nikki Haley, Jeb Bush, and, you know, the usual losers. And so that's what the Democrats do. They feel comforted because they're the court faction. I mean, they're the party that owns Washington. So they want to make sure not to jeopardize the security of ownership and not allow an RFK Jr. or Bernie Sanders or someone else who might upset the apple cart from the left, but still create havoc to get in there.
Yeah. I mean, and speaking of RFK, I would imagine that'd be a good choice for the Democrats. He's moderate. He cares about a lot of he talks about welfare like they like, but at the same time, he talks about food issues and he seems to be somewhat, he actually cares about America, which I still think a lot on the left who aren't completely brainwashed by all these progressive ideals would go with. I think he would be a strong candidate on the left for the Democrats.
He might be. I'm not a particular fan of RFK Jr.
Well,
but
I'm saying...
His appeal resides more in the fact that, well, he's not like the rest of them. You know, I mean, I liked Tulsi Gabbard a few years ago, and of course, look what happened. She's definitely on a journey now. I mean, she's left the Democrats altogether, and she's become quite a strident critic of many aspects of wokeism and the deep state and all this stuff. So, you know, maybe there's hope for RFK Jr. I don't see him there yet, though.
Yeah, and it'll be very interesting because it does look like they're pushing Biden out, but the question that remains is, who are they going to put on there? Thanks. Thank you, Steve. Next up, Mike Gallagher is out, and a MAGA firebrand is officially running for the Senate.
Hey, America. How tired are you of mainstream corporate media's biased narratives and manipulated news? Their dishonesty and attempts to influence this generation have been exposed, put on display for anyone who's even half paying attention. But the New American Magazine has been an honest source of news and commentary for over 50 years. This is your opportunity to receive the stalwart of principled journalism at a deep discount. Picture a beautifully published magazine arriving at your doorstep twice a month, packed with insightful stories written with integrity. It's also available digitally on the New American's mobile app. Get up to speed with intelligent coverage from a freedom perspective. Right now, for a limited time, the New American is available to radio listeners at a 25% discount on a new subscription. Visit thenewamerican.com/radio25 and receive 25% off. Subscribe today at thenewamerican.com/radio25.
The New American has just released our latest bookazine, a collection of articles on self-reliance. It's called Self-Reliance, Foundation of Freedom. Without individual responsibility and without the ability to take care of ourselves without government help, we cannot be free. In this polished collector's edition, we have articles on a number of important topics, including the self-sufficiency of the founders, preparing for a worst-case scenario, firearm self-reliance, building a wood shack, and the importance of community, among many other topics. Now, the authors of the articles are experts in their fields. We encourage you to get a copy. You can order your copy at thenewamerican.com/shop, or you can call our office at 800-727-8783. However you do it, make sure you get your copy of Self-Reliance, the Foundation of Freedom. If this November's general election will be conducted even remotely fairly and the lawfare fails, Donald Trump will win the presidency. But what kind of Congress would he have to govern with? Well, one person who won't be in D.C. for sure is Wisconsin Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher. In a surprising development that has MAGA constituents jumping for joy, the four-term congressman just said he won't run for re-election in November. Gallagher made his announcement on the social media platform X on Saturday. He didn't specify why he was bowing out. He just said that the founders never intended people to make a career out of being in Congress. The move comes just days after Gallagher voted against impeaching DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, the man in charge of the most porous border in U.S. history. Many believe Gallagher's vote earned him such loud chastisement from constituents that it was too much to bear. And a few states over, Montana Congressman Matt Rosendale just made his bid for the U.S. Senate official. Unlike Gallagher, MAGA conservatives are going to miss Rosendale in the House. According to the New Americans Freedom Index, the one-term Montana congressman has a rare freedom score of 100%. That means that he voted constitutionally on every vote that was considered when putting the score together. Rosendale's primary opponent is Tim Sheehy, an ex-Navy SEAL, aerial firefighter, millionaire business owner, and part-time rancher. Sheehy has the support of Montana's governor, Greg Gianforte, as well as its sitting Republican Senator, Steve Daines. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump are also backing Sheehy in this race. The two are going to duke it out to see who gets to take on Democratic Senator John Tester. Tester has served as a U.S. Senator since 2007. His seat is considered vulnerable in very red Montana. In 2018, he was reelected after beating Rosendale, who at the time was the Montana State Auditor. Republicans will love to pick off Tester as part of the larger effort to take back the Senate. All right, Steve, so all sorts of interesting developments for political gurus here and connoisseurs.
Well, you're the authority in Montana, Paul. What do you think of Rosendale's chances?
Well, I don't know. I didn't think he was going to lose to Tester in 2018, and he did. Tester is a very interesting character. I've met Tester. I've talked to Tester. I've seen the way he goes around. So even though he's a Democrat, Montana is a very interesting place. It's a very staunchly independent place. It has some leftist social streaks and whatnot. And Tester goes around, and as an organic farmer, he's able to talk. He talks like people. He understands them. He hasn't been totally bad on gun control. He's been bad on everything else. So I think it's going to be hard to unseat Tester. He's been there for a long time, and he knows how to talk to these people. But then again, in 2018, or was it 2020, Montana went full red. Before that, it had Steve Bullock. He was the governor. He had termed out. So I don't think it's going to be that easy to unseat Tester, and I don't think it's going to be that easy for Rosendale to beat Sheehy. He's got the support of what I think is a very popular governor over there in Greg Gianforte and Steve Daines. So we'll see. What do you make of all this?
Well, not to mention Donald Trump.
Although yes.
That didn't help Mehmet Oz and a number of other people in the 2022 election. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, I can speak maybe more authoritatively about Mike Gallagher because he happens to be my congressman, and I believe he's your congressman.
Too.
And we were discussing before we went on air that we both were among doubtless many of his, you know, disgruntled constituents who left messages on his.
Yeah,
you know,
I was one of those angry constituents who left
him
the phone call.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so we both kind of left messages to make our feelings vent a little bit, I guess.
Yes.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that he's become the latest rhino-type Republican to, I think, probably privately decry how mean-spirited things were. This isn't the Republican Party that I used to know, you know. And, of course, the implication being that Trump and those terrible MAGA people are responsible for the transformation. Well, you know, the party that the Mitt Romneys and so forth are familiar with and that they rhapsodize about with such nostalgia, of course, is the party of the rhinos, the party where there are a few malcontent, you know, true believers like Ron Paul and the fringes, but they're kept safely out there and the party is controlled.
They want to
keep
people like Rosendale on the fringes.
Sure, exactly. So, you know, so Gallagher is clearly one of those. This is his fourth term and I'm relieved to see him go. But I cannot believe, I think we said this already last week, but it bears repeating. This is the guy who chairs the House Special Committee on China. He's supposedly this China expert.
Yes.
I can't really speak. I know he's
That's
had a lot of classes on China. I don't know if he's lived in China the way I do have, or whether he speaks Chinese as I do, or whether he's experienced, I'm pretty sure he didn't experience the COVID lockdowns and everything that ensued from that as I did, you know. So, frankly, I could probably do a better job than he did as far as China policy is concerned. However, you would still think that if he had a scintilla of common sense, he would say, okay, let's see, what's a large part of this whole southern border controversy?
Yeah.
It's the fact
that the Chinese are coming through.
We're to the tune of almost 10,000 a month now. And many of them, probably the majority of them, are here for good and sufficient reasons. We talked about this before. China has a lot of problems. There's a lot of good people in China who want to get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
However, it's inconceivable, for example, if China were to suddenly say, we're going to have an open door policy and any foreigner who wants can come here at any time and just live here. It's inconceivable that the U.S. wouldn't immediately dispatch a bunch of, you know, agents and CIA plants over to China to find out what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
So without
why
doubt,
wouldn't they do it?
Without doubt, why wouldn't the China? I mean, they've been sending spy balloons over American territory. So all this is going on the border. Mayorkas is directly responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Gallagher finds this weaselly way, not only to avoid voting, but he didn't even give his fellow GOP caucus members the courtesy, didn't pay them the courtesy of saying, guys, I'm not there with this. I'm going to vote no.
Yeah.
That's the whole reason it failed, is they didn't know how he was going to. They had the other two votes accounted for. There are two other people, you know, Buck and the guy from California.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
he was a surprise no vote.
He was a surprise. People suspected that he might because he apparently had some skeptical, some questioning in one of the sessions leading up to the actual impeachment vote. So people suspected that he might not be there, but he didn't tell anyone. And that, you know, I mean, that is the height, you know, for all the criticism of how nasty the MAGA people are and how they don't play fair. I mean, that's the height of party disloyalty. To basically not say ahead of time, you know, you can't count on my vote. I'm not there. So you're going to have to do the math differently.
Yeah. Well, and let's go back to the Rosendale issue, because Rosendale was one of the ones who voted for that. But the strategy here, and this is why I think Trump and whatnot are going for Sheehy, because Rosendale's seat was safe. He's got central and eastern Montana. And outside of the Indian reservations, that's deep, deep red country. He was going to get it again. And they figured they could bring in a moderate like Sheehy and have a chance of taking out Tester. So now it's like Rosendale on the way in their view, and I could see where they're coming from. He kind of mucked it all up, the whole strategy. And I can't help but think that maybe there was something to that. What are your thoughts on that?
Again, I don't know enough about Montana politics. I've only been to Montana 3 or 4 times in my life, so I'm not terribly familiar. Yeah. I mean, you live there.
Anything can happen there.
You've met Congressman Rosendale more than once. And
yeah.
I just wanted to point out Gallagher. It's also possible that as a result of this kind of, betrayal, he may have been taken behind the woodshed and told, you can run for re-election if you want, but don't expect to get any plum committee chairs after the stunt you just pulled, because he really did leave... obviously we're scapegoating here. Ultimately, the buck stops with Mike Johnson and the GOP leadership in the House. But he is a very convenient scapegoat. So it wouldn't surprise me if he was also told, we're going to pull some of your funds. Don't expect any support from us running for re-election.
Do you think the MAGA faction of the GOP has that much power? It wasn't the option.
No, it's not the MAGA. Heck, I mean, he embarrassed the entire GOP.
I see.
You could say what you want about the likes of Marjorie Taylor Greene, but where she stands on every vote. And that's the way it should be, in my opinion.
Well, thank you, Steve. All right, folks, after this, Alex Newman is going to join us, and he's going to tell us about his newest book.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
Hey, listeners and readers, we want to hear from you. We want to know what you think about the stories we report, the way we report them, and what you'd like to hear more and less of, and any other comments or questions related to The New American Daily. You can send your comments and questions to dailyshow@thenewamerican.com. That's dailyshow@thenewamerican.com. And during our Friday episodes, we'll read some of your comments. Again, send your questions to dailyshow@thenewamerican.com. The New American senior editor, Alex Newman, just wrote a book or published a book called Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. And he joins us to talk about it. Hey, Alex.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me, Paul.
Yeah. I mean, this is obviously something that is very close to our mission statement or to our mission as an organization. And that is helping people understand the dangers of public schools or government schools as they are. And you've been at the center. You've been one of the experts who's written, who's helped with our FBA curricula and all that. So tell us about this book and where people can get it and what some of the main points in it are.
Well, thank you, Paul. So there was a few goals with the book. One of the main objectives was to debunk some really important myths that we have to understand if we're going to have an accurate diagnosis. And of course, just like in medicine, if you have a wrong diagnosis, you're going to treat the patient wrong. It's not going to help him or her recover. Same deal with the government schools. And so one of the myths that we knock out is that the schools are broken. In fact, the schools are not broken. They're working very, very well once you understand the intended purpose. The architects of the system always intended to use these government schools to turn children away from God, away from the church, away from their family, and away from their country. So they wanted a fundamental transformation of our country. And at almost every step of the way, you see communists, then communists teamed up with super capitalists and deep state conspirators working to undermine our country through the public schools. So they're not broken. They're working very well. There was no golden era of public schools that we can or should want to go back to. They were always rotten from the very beginning. Now, they've gotten more rotten with each successive generation, but because people don't have a reference point, they think, oh, well, you know, when I was a kid, the public schools were okay, now they're bad. Well, and that's what each generation has said now, going on five generations. So we have to get these myths knocked out. So the first thing I do with the book is trace the whole history. Who came up with the idea that the government ought to educate our children? It was a very new idea, right? People don't realize these government schools have only been with us for about 150 years. So who came up with the idea? Why? Who implemented the idea and why? And how did we get to where we're at? So that's what I do, show kind of how the UN is now taking a more and more active role. And I do believe, Paul, the reason I focused on this out of all the other things that I could be writing about or talking about is because this is the issue that is the most important of all the issues. If we allow 80% of our children to be indoctrinated against God, against their country, against their family, at best, all we're doing is delaying the inevitable, because America is going to go totalitarian. The world is going to have this new world order that these evildoers keep proposing, and there's no stopping it. At best, it'll be delaying the inevitable. So we have to get a handle on this. We cannot continue to sacrifice 80% or more of our children to these institutions. And so we end with a very strong call for parents to get their children out. And then afterward, very, very extensive, looking at what is Christian education? What kind of education did our founding fathers get? What did education look like in America before the government got involved? And we hope that'll at least be useful information for rebuilding a legitimate educational system at some point in the future.
Well, that's great. So you're saying this includes not only information of what government school was really intended to do, but a how-to on how to get out. Because I know that I haven't done even a fraction of the proselytizing when it comes to homeschooling. You know, we're converts ourselves from years ago and whatnot. We would never go back to government schools. But I think that's one of the biggest questions and the biggest obstacles for people is, well, what else do we do? Because everyone is so used to having this big kid daycare, right? They come, they pick your kids up, they hold them for 8-9 hours, they drop them right back off at your doorstep. And would you say that is the largest obstacle, or at least seemingly the largest obstacle that parents have, the challenge when it comes to going, transitioning from government school to something that is not government school?
I think the biggest challenge, Paul, is just a lack of information. If parents knew the information that is contained in this book, they would not let their child step foot near a government indoctrination camp. And I say that unequivocally. It doesn't matter where you are on the political spectrum. I mean, even far left liberal Democrats want their children to read. Even far left liberal Democrats want their children to be able to do basic math. You know, there are very few people in the world who would say, oh, here, have my child government school, if they knew what was truly happening. And so that's the goal of this book, is to get people to understand the enormous threat. I tell people, you're like playing Russian roulette. You're giving your child a loaded revolver. It's got 5 rounds out of 6 in the chambers filled up. And you're saying, here, let's play a fun game, right? Point this at your head. It's absolutely insane. We must stop it. So once people have the accurate information, then it's not a matter of, you know, can we do this? It's just a matter of how do we do this? And we have a lot of resources in the book. We have a lot of ideas how to make it work financially, good ideas for curricula. Of course, we work closely with the Freedom Project Academy. In fact, I taught there for 12 years. I serve on the board, a great option for parents who do want a legitimate education for their children. So we've got a lot of resources that we recommend in the end of the book, a lot of ideas for how they can move forward on that. But the key thing is to just get parents the accurate information about what's going on. They're indoctrinating your children to hate you, to hate God, to hate their country. They're dumbing down your children so that they are literally becoming handicapped. I mean, they can't even read. We've got millions of kids graduating from high school that can't read their high school diploma. That's deliberate, right? It's a relatively simple matter to teach a child how to read. You can do it in a few months with a 5-year-old, right? You don't need 12 years and $250,000 to have a child graduate who can't read their high school diploma. And then, of course, the sexualization is just beyond grotesque. So if parents knew these things, they would get them out. And we think everything we need in this book for parents to make the right decision, and then even ideas on how they start walking in the right direction once they have made the right decision.
It's very interesting that so many parents don't recognize or realize that their kids, that they have the least influence on their kids, and the schools that they attend are the biggest, like they take the biggest bulk of that time. You're talking about 8-9 hours. And it's interesting that we've gotten to the point where we don't realize how crazy that is to have others with their ideas indoctrinate our children, even if they're necessarily good, because we've realized this when we started homeschooling our kid. And, you know, he sounds like us. He, you know, we're not worried about him. But it's like, then you think we start talking about thinking about other kids, and it's like, well, their main influencers aren't their parents. It's the teachers. It's whoever it is, you know, whatever curricular events, who's leading those and whatnot. Is that part of your red pilling effort there, is to help people realize how that you have to have more influence over your children? Do people realize that they need to have more influence than their schools, or is that even a foreign concept to a lot of parents?
That is a foreign concept, again, because we've grown up with this, right? We're five generations deep into this crazy social experiment, and so we don't have a reference point. It's very much like the frog in the boiling water. Well, if you had just thrown him in the boiling water, he would have jumped right out, and the story would have ended right there. But when you raise the temperature slowly over a period of 100 years, you get to where we're at now. So it is just absolutely critical that parents take this seriously. I did a speaking tour across the United States in 2019. I've done hundreds of talks in at least 45, 46 states now, many foreign countries as well, on this issue. And everywhere I go, Paul, parents come up to me crying. I wish I had known this before I lost my children to heroin, to Antifa, to, you know, whatever it is, communism. And they didn't. So that's the goal with this. Everything people will need to make a good decision is in here. It is available at shopjbs.org. If people want to get it there, shopjbs.org has got a good deal on these. It's been endorsed by a lot of great Americans, people that everybody would recognize. We've got Kirk Cameron, General Flynn, Dr. McCullough, Pete Hegseth of Fox and Friends, Dr. James Lindsay. I mean, the list just goes on and on.
Diane Douglas, Bill Federer, Alex Jones, everyone. Yeah, you got a bunch of people endorsing this, and for good reason. This isn't the first time you've delved into this. You also co-authored another Blumenthal.
Blumenfeld. That's right.
Yes, yep. Yes. So
the book is actually dedicated to Sam and a few other educational giants who laid the foundation that we could then build on. So
thank you, Alex. Thank you for all you're doing. Like you said, you can get this, folks. You can get this at shopjbs.org. And thank you for your terrific work, Alex.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of The New American Daily. Remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. And please make sure to join us again tomorrow.